the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got joining us once again, Bobby Osinski. Bobby.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for joining us again. You know what? I'm just going to keep inviting Bobby because every time he's on, he's awesome. So, so as long as you keep saying yes, Bobby.
You jinxed me tonight.
Next to him, we've got the one and only Scott Gershon.
Hey, Mike. It's kind of upbeat. You know, it's kind of dark and rainy today. So
yeah, that was, yeah. Okay, we'll take it, though.
Yeah, it was like 110 degrees last week, and it's like, what, 50 degrees today?
I know. It's a little weird. I will say it's a little weird. And next to Scott, we've got Bobby Summerfield. Bobby!
Hello, Mikey. How are you, sir?
Good. Welcome back, Bobby.
Thanks, my matey. Nice to be back.
It's always good to have you.
Thank you,
have
my
you with us. And next in, we've got Brandon Birdside. Brandon.
What's up, Mike?
Good to see you, Brandon.
Good to be back.
Sorry I didn't return your phone call earlier, but we'll talk later.
I don't even remember why I called you.
And finally, we've got the one and only, The Rock, the Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast. I like that one. Rob Arbiter.
Hola, Miguel.
Rob.
How are you, Mike?
Good. How you doing?
Never better. Never better.
Wow, there's definitely, you know, a lack of juice right now. I think we're all still a little mellow. I mean, you listen.
No, we're three juice here.
Well, joining us today, we have a great guest. We've got joining us from SD Ray Associates, Scott Ray. Scott.
Yay!
All right, Scott. Yay! Yay!
I just came in to get a cup of coffee. All I wanted.
And then you will leave here sorely disappointed.
Now, Scott's company reps a lot of great products, and a couple of them being Waves plugins and Receptor and Quested speakers and
Eventide.
So these are dealers.
Telefunken, Millennia. Wow. Sonovox, Broadway Big Band.
So are you ever going to get any pro gear in there?
No.
Anyhow, Scott, thank you so much for joining us. And got a lot of great things to talk about there.
You know, when he just rattled down that list of brand names, I just realized exactly how much of my cash is going to your business. Yeah. Yeah.
I know Scott.
Hey,
Scott,
can you hook me up?
Yeah, Gershon could say the same thing.
Yeah,
pretty impressive.
Well, guys, I will say that I feel a little out of sorts because I've been running for like the last 2 hours just trying to get here. So we'll see how it goes. But it was kind of weird. Am I the only one that was today kind of a weird vibey day for anybody else? It was really weird for me.
I have no windows in my room, so it could be snowing. It could be 100 degrees.
Well, it was just, you know, 50 degrees cooler than it was a week ago.
It was just weird. I'll tell you what. We'll start right with this. Literally, usually I have to leave by about 7 to get here by 8, you know, to get set up and everything. And at 7 o'clock, I got a 15-second commercial handed to me that had to get done. And it was like, you're kidding me, right? And it's one of those situations that people don't understand that working as a professional in audio, sometimes things just have to get done. You can't say no. I mean, it's your job, you know. You will mix this. And
Brain surgeon mixer.
But it's funny, though, because I get people all the time saying, well, you know, can't you just do it the next day, or can't you just do it, you know, or can't you just give it to somebody else? But, you know, one of the things, as much as fun as we have doing what we do, there's also the other side of the coin where, you know, a lot of times it's our responsibility to do some of this work. But
if they can find you.
You know, being a service business, you've got to be available to the clients.
Exactly. And there's a certain give and take. And one thing I wanted to start off with as I was driving out here is I'm sure all of you have had that situation where sometimes you just have to do something. You know, as much as you don't want to, you just have to do it. And when you talk to people and, hey, how can I be an audio engineer? How can I get into post-production and things like that? One thing that, you know, people don't realize is like Scott was saying, it's a service
prick your finger, write down your name on the piece of paper.
But really, it's a service industry, and you are going to be servicing your client. And if that means at 7 o'clock having to mix a 15-second commercial as fast as you've ever mixed a commercial, then you're going to mix that commercial.
So it's 15 seconds, and it took you, what, 30 seconds to do?
It took me literally probably about 10 minutes to mix. But that's only because, you know, you go into – instinct mode where you can just kind of do things to kind of help you out. Like, for instance, if you have to mix fast, the first thing I usually do is I lower my monitors, because you can really tell on a lower level where things are falling into place.
I thought you were going to say the first thing I do is lower my expectations.
That's the second thing I do.
Lower your standards.
No, but that's why I lower my monitors, because you know what? I'm not going to go all nuts or crazy on the EQ, because the first thing for a good mix is getting the relative levels.
And when you say mix, what are you talking about? What elements are you talking about?
Dialogue, narration, music,
two tracks,
sound effects.
Four tracks, six tracks, eight tracks.
Yeah, and okay. It was like 16 tracks, because there was about eight tracks of audio, four tracks of dialogue. Okay. But you know, you do it enough times, you kind of know, especially when you do like spot mixing and things like that, you know things are supposed to hit and things are supposed to pop.
Think it's an L2 from waves and everything.
No, but that's true too. That's the second thing. When you mix fast, mix with tools that you know. Mix with tools that you're familiar with. Yeah. There's nothing worse than trying to learn a new piece of gear under a deadline, which everybody's done. Mm-hmm. But you know, you mix with what you know. And actually, I did use waves. I rely heavily on waves, especially the new compressor, the MV2.
Max volume.
Yeah, max volume.
That was a lifesaver. It just knocks your VO, because not only can you compress the high end, but you can also bring up the low end. And so you set a little range to where you want your sound to fall in. It's pretty
I use max volume all the time, especially I've got these big action sequences. Yeah. And I need this piece of dialogue to cut through big orchestra, big sound effects, and you got to find it. So instead of dipping, you compress, especially on the low end, I like the low threshold.
Yeah.
We can bring all that low volume signal, bring it up.
Yeah.
And you have control over a compressor. It's kind of a one control. Meanwhile, this one you can say, bring this up this much or bring this down that much.
A little goes a long way, too. It's amazing. Yeah. It really is. But anyhow, you work at a lower volume, work with tools that you know, and your instinct kind of kicks in, and bingo, I got that mixed down, and I'm here, at least physically.
You have a revision in the morning.
Which is okay, too. All you have to hit is your delivery. It's amazing,
exactly.
Right? Isn't
exactly.
that it? You just have to hit your delivery.
You know, I have a story. I don't know if you care or not, but you can always edit it out. But I have a story which I think is one of the worst examples ever of you're expected to do something on a project and you just can't say no. You know, like what you just experienced.
Right.
We were mixing an independent film at my place, and the director had a very unrealistic expectation of how long this final day of mixing was going to be. We'd already been in for 4 days. This was the fifth day. It was supposed to be the last day. It was supposed to be a 12-hour session. It was obvious at the 12-hour mark we weren't going to get it done, but she had to make this festival, so we kept working and working and working
Guess.
So check this out. So the session ended up going 30 hours. With no break. So I sat in the studio straight, 30 hours, no break. The session finally ended. I mean, I guess the session ended at about 29 and a half, because when I finally switched off all the gear and shut off the lights, turned everything off, I realized we were at exactly the 30-hour mark. As I was walking up the steps to call it a day, the doorbell rang, and it was a singer that I had forgotten we had a session booked with at that moment. Who had shown up with the executive producer for the project. They showed up right as I was leaving. I had just shut everything off. And we had this session scheduled, and they had moved things around to be there, so I couldn't cancel it. So I went back into the studio, turned everything on, and then did 8 straight hours with her. So it was 38 hours, and they finally let me off the hook when they could see I was just hallucinating.
your eyes were big, they were bloodshot.
I was literally, except for, you know, a few 5-minute breaks, I was in the studio nonstop for 38 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, but the first 24 are the hardest.
Yeah. Well, after a while, you stop caring or you know where you are.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say no. I mean, they'd showed up for this session, and I would have been the most evil guy on earth if I'd canceled it.
No, but it's so true. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But I mean, it's much like when you're writing, though. If you have a deadline, you got to hit that deadline, you know?
Oh, yeah. I go crazy, actually, trying to hit. I go into hermit mode the last 2 weeks. Just nobody bother me because I'm not calling anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking to anybody. And it just goes for, 16, 18 hours
wow.
a day. Yeah.
Do you find you then just crank out page after page of all work and no play makes Bobby a double
just being the same sentence over and over again.
Well, I can.
Yeah, what's that? The Shining, right?
Yeah, Shining.
Awesome.
Anyway, so just know that with all this fun that we have, there is great responsibility.
Fun?
Wow, it sounds like a superhero, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With great power.
That's right. With great power. All right, well, let's move on. Scott, let's talk. Let's talk about...
Okay. Oh, sorry. The other way.
After you.
Wow, this is going to be fun.
And we're across from each other, so we're stereo.
Tell us a little bit about some of the gear that you rep. Anything new out there? I mean, obviously, we talked a little bit about Waves plugins, and let me just say, Waves are awesome. They've been around forever. They're probably one of the leading plugins out there. Everybody, the de facto standards like the Platinum, you know, everybody at least has the
Mercury.
Platinum. The de facto is the Platinum. although more and more you see a lot of Mercury's there, but it just seems like the Platinum seems to be the sweet spot, especially for post-production.
And Post, bought up a huge number of those, and it covered so much of what they needed that they haven't really moved beyond it. But in the music world, there's a lot of stuff that's new and it's really fantastic.
Yeah, so the new CLA stuff, I think, is
that
really
stuff's
good.
Great. There's a whole other category of things, which is the Signature Series product, which is really very interesting. It goes against what all of us feel as engineers. You know, that's our job. Why would we let somebody else make that choice? But if you're a songwriter or someone who wants to produce a sound and you're not going to spend 25 years figuring out all the ins and outs of audio, it's a way to arrive at a sound really fast and really nicely. It's a great thing.
Now, tell us a little bit about the philosophy of Waves, because, you know, sometimes people get the impression that they're just kind of cranking out all these plugins, but they really do a pretty good extensive job when they're going to model a piece of gear or do something. I mean, they're pretty meticulous. I mean, I know their API stuff. I know API really well,
yeah.
And their API plugins are pretty darn good.
You know, there are a couple of things about Waves. I think that if you're on the consumer side of it and you don't have all the history that I have, because I've been working with them for about 14 years, I guess the best way to describe them is that they are first and foremost audio fanatics. That's what they really care about. That's all they really care about. And all the other things that go along with business are very secondary in their mind. So what happens is they put a tremendous amount of energy into creating these products. And then as an afterthought, they do all the other marketing things that go along with it. And so it leads to a situation where audio professionals find that they get a product that's really beyond compare. There's really nothing else out there that is consistently better over such a huge line, you know, of offering of products. But it can be rough, or it has been rough at times, understanding the way they operate and the way they do things. In the past few years, it's really smoothed out tremendously. But there's been turbulence because they just go, well, this is what it takes to do that. That's the way we're doing it. And it doesn't arrive at the consumer's perception very positively sometimes. But, I have a lot of examples of projects that they've done that have taken so much more work than people would imagine. You'd think, well, okay, they built the Fairchild model, the Puke Child.
Right.
So they go to Jack Puig and they say, what's your favorite one? You know, and he says, you guys don't know what you're doing. And they say, no, trust us, we know. That dialogue goes back and forth for almost 3 years of him. They take away the thing. They send him a sample. He says, no, that's not it. What's wrong with it? He gives them a list. They go back. They redo it. And it keeps going back and forth and back and forth like that for a huge amount of time with several people constantly concentrating on it. And it leads to a situation where at the end of it, they've spent all this time and energy, and then he says, yes, they say, this is perfect.
Right.
And Jack says, no, it's not perfect. It's too perfect. And then he says, you have to put
the flaws back in. So they've got it down to where it matches on the meters. It fits. It does exactly what it's supposed to. And he says, no, but it should have this little artifact, and it should have that little artifact. And they'd have to go back and put that in. That being said, when it finally arrived, it's so authentic that people who have them like it. And in other words, like you said with API, you know that sound.
Right.
You know, I took it over when it first came out to Val Garay, who was really involved with API the whole way, and he uses it all the time. And he was very impressed. And I've had him turn down a lot of things. He'll just go, no, I'm confused. This isn't right. I don't like that. And that's it. So, but I find people around town who are putting the Puke Child on the stereo bus with no settings, just neutral, because it imparts that sort of richness.
Really?
In that sound.
Yeah, we've done that.
A lot of people have. And I don't know if they all discover it independently.
Just like a pass-through.
Yeah, just like you would with a real Fairchild. Wow. We don't need any compression. Let's just get the magic on there.
You know what? The Neve or the V compressor is the same.
Yeah. That's the meticulous detail. And, you know, it's rough in there. They fight for everything. In other words, the guy who is in charge of the product, and I think, Rob, you probably know some of these people, and maybe you do, Scott. They fight for it. They, no, this isn't right yet. It's got to be. And they'll go on and on and on and put in a huge amount of time and effort into it. And for me, you know, as a representative, as a person who just is a liaison between the market and the technicians and the marketing, you know, it's a source of pride. I don't have to make claims that aren't true. I don't have to, you know, build it up. I do a whole other function, which you guys were talking about the extra hours. I remember, if you don't mind a diversion into a little story, one day I was working and Rob called me. And he said, listen, Stevie needs a little help. Stevie Wonder needs a little help. Would you be willing to go over and help him? And I said, sure. You know, it was a little late in the afternoon, but I thought, why not? So I thought, why in the world would he need help? He's got a platinum button. He's got a couple of them. Mm-hmm. And so okay, fine. So then Rob calls back later and says, listen, you need to talk to this person, Femi Jaya. He's the engineer. Call him. He'll tell you what's going on. Well, it turned out that they were not at Stevie's studio. They were at another studio in Burbank, and they didn't have any waves. So what they wanted me to do is they were going to buy a bundle. They just wanted me to come in and install it, get it running so that they could use it. It didn't sound that unusual to me, but I thought, well, you know, it's almost 6 o'clock. But hopped in the car, drove across town in the traffic, you know.
By the way, we always try to make the request seem not unusual.
Yeah, exactly.
That it seemed not unusual.
Well, so I drive across town and I get there and I'm thinking, well, maybe Stevie Wonder will be there. I don't know. And I get there and he's not there. Fim is just mixing by himself. And I walk in and I go, well, what's the problem? And he goes, well, they don't have waves here. And I said, oh, well, we'll fix that. And I go, but, you know, you couldn't wait? And he goes, no, I can't wait. I said, why not? And he said, because Stevie is on Oprah Winfrey today, and Oprah is telling everybody that the album is already out. And it ain't out. He goes, I'm mixing it right now. And I go, oh, well. And I think, well, that's pretty serious. I mean, you know, that means everybody in the country is looking for this record, and he's got to finish it. And then he turns to me and he goes, waves is our sound. I can't mix it without this.
All right.
And I thought, where are you going to find a case more extreme than Stevie Wonder sitting on Oprah Winfrey, her telling everybody that his record is out, go buy it.
She was actually holding up a copy.
Holding it up and saying, go buy it. And he turns to me and he says, it's not out. He goes, they're playing to loops. They're playing to loops up there. These loops that I have here, it's not done. So that's an example. I mean, there's no kidding around there.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, so I got home 9:30 or so, and it's nothing like what you guys are talking about, but you know, it
we
does
just
happen.
Have to change the story so it was 9:30 the next day.
So a week later, you know, I finally got it installed. And
that, I can just attest to the fact, that's one of many, many, many times that I've called Scott with emergencies. Yeah. That is definitely true.
But I don't do those anymore.
Oh, so we can't call you for an install?
Well, you guys.
Yeah. Scott, one thing I really like about Waves, though, is they just don't rest on their laurels. They're always bringing out new plugins. They're always doing some cool stuff. I'm on their website right now, and you know, I just see the C6 multiband compressor, and that looks really cool.
Yeah,
the C4 is awesome. Yeah, I mean,
that was really produced to appeal to the guys who are out doing live. Waves has developed a whole line of things for live and a bunch of different systems that work for Digico, for DigiDesign, for Yamaha, and for any other console. So they spend a lot of time and energy preparing that, and they're getting feedback from the front of house people and from the monitor people.
Literally.
About
no,
not from the monitor people. They're getting information. At any rate, but it's interesting too because the rate of production that they have are doing now is an enormous increase. And what happened is, for many years they produce a fairly high rate relative to, say, other manufacturers that I worked for in my life. You know, you do two or three products that are good a year. That's pretty you know, substantial. Not many companies do that ever.
Right.
But they redesigned their business process. They had some consultants come in and they said, look, okay, here's the thing. You will have a panel of people. The panel of people will sign on to everything. And you cannot change course unless all the people on the panel sign off. So what happened was that the teams would get a hold of their projects and there was never any interruption. So in 2009, I went to Tel Aviv. For some meetings that I did, and while I was there, they had a whole company meeting, all these people. And during the course of this meeting, they announced that at that point, which was in August of 2009, their production had increased 500%.
Wow.
And it extended beyond that. So they could actually stop right now producing anything and pretty much fill a year at a higher rate than any other company I know of anywhere.
Wow.
Not Apple, but I'm saying in audio.
Yeah. Is this just software or hardware and software, or mostly hardware?
Their focus is they have done hardware and they did some very good hardware, but they realize that it's not really what their focus is. So they have the Max BCL. It's a great box, and they'll keep making that and a few other devices of that nature, but they don't see themselves as a hardware company. They see themselves as software. So in the live arena, you can buy a card for the Yamaha console that they make, and they have a server that they provide, but that's not the focus. The focus is to give you the ability to run the processors that you use on a tour or, you know, in any kind of live setting. And so they produce hardware where they need to, where it's absolutely necessary, but if it's not, they just soon have somebody else do it because the rate of change is so high in that world that that's a particular focus that you have to stay on. That's a whole job by itself. So.
I consulted on the Surround 360 package, and I found them lovely to work with. They were really nice people, and they were very responsive, and the project went very quickly.
It goes quickly and also methodically, but meticulously.
Oh, yeah.
That because I remember the development of that, and I remember having conversations with you and others about it. They got so many things so right for that world, and they spent a huge amount of time finding out what they really need to make, and it makes a huge difference because a lot of companies have some things that work in Surround, but a comprehensive bundle that solves your whole setup where you can tune your speakers, you can, if they're irregular, you can fix it, where you got reverb and the reverb isn't mixed with the reflections so that you have the choices about that. Mm. A lot of thought, a lot of effort, and then the execution, everybody loves the sound of it, it works the way it should, it's intuitive. The displays, the GUIs are very simple.
Yeah.
You do that. One of the things I worked for Lexicon before I worked for Waves, great company. And I thought, you know, I want to go on to do something else. And I was looking around. And I talked to a lot of people about what's out there and what could, you know, I had a few offers that I could take. And I remember I'd go around and say, well, you know, and ask the salesman in town and say, what do you think about so-and-so company? And they go, oh, they're really good. But, you know, they got a, it's a little bit of a, you know, and they'd have some drawback. But as I went around, I didn't really get any about Waves. So I thought, well, I'll give it a try. So I went into one of the stores. They had it on display. I opened a Renaissance EQ, played some music, pushed up the low mid, and went, oh, man, this is the real thing. I mean, back then, you didn't even think about plugins. And I just thought that I could sell this to anybody. This is real. And they have never stopped doing that. It's never gone on.
I would still use Renaissance.
People still use C1 and L1.
Yeah, they're
15, 16, 17 years old.
Yeah.
What else is
there? There's now Wave vintage plugins.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and that's, the other thing, too, is, Platinum Bundle, it's about the same price as if you wanted to get a really good high-end piece of analog gear, And it's pretty affordable. As much as people sometimes say about Waves being expensive, when you figure how many plugins that you get in those bundles and what they can do, it's a pretty good bang for your buck. It's a good investment.
In the days of the multi-effects processors, outboard gear, spending $3,000-$4,000 was not unheard of.
No.
Right.
That's pretty, for a multi-processor.
I sold tons of 480Ls. Right. And they were a lot more than that.
Those are 10, those are 11, 12, 14.
And, but what I find is that the perception about cost and the reality of cost, it's hard to get that in people's minds. If you take, like a Platinum Bundle, the number of processors at the quality level that you're talking about, real working professional tools that records are made with all the time.
Right.
I don't think you can get, in the days, all of us being analog guys in the past, forget it. You couldn't get a room to do all that. There's no way. It'd be too much wire, too much rack. You couldn't do it. And so you fast forward for $2,600, $2,700. Now all of a sudden that stuff's at your fingertips on as many channels as you want to put it on. That's a huge thing. But if you break down the number of plugins in that bundle for that price, they come out to be really a small amount of money, $150 each. So you got a great reverb in there. Well, can you buy a great reverb for $150? Not really. And that's with no, price adjustment. you can spend a lot of dollars if you buy a Mercury bundle plus an SSL.
Right.
But you're going to get practically something that you won't be able to work your way through for months.
Right.
You won't even get through all the processors for months. There's no physical studio that can do that anywhere in the world. You just can't.
You could build a console channel by channel. These couple channels are SSL. These are some Neves. These are.
But could you have 20 Neve EQs?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what's
30,
great about the Waves is that you can customize your console based on 10 channels of this, 6 channels of that.
Yeah, and the thing I find is especially you can mix and match. You can just have essentially the tone palette of an API console.
Right.
Or you can have. Yeah, but I really like SSL on guitars and snares, and I really like Neve. And that's a thing you couldn't do before, really.
I mean, I find it in sound design and post-production, I do that all the time, and that, to me, it's amazing, some mixers I know go, an EQ, especially in post. I got an EQ, I can fix the problem, whatever. And now I look at EQs as color. It's like crayons, different hues of things. And Waves has so many of them, whether I want to use, the Phase Linear EQ, or I want to use Renaissance, or the Neve. The Neve definitely has color.
Mm-hmm.
Or the API, it doesn't have as much color. So.
And their newer ones, the Puke Tech and the Eddie Kramer Helios, they're fantastic. I mean, it's a thrill. What happens to me is, having done this as long as I have, they go, oh, we got another EQ. And I go, another EQ? Why do we need another EQ? And I get it out, or they'll go with the hybrid delay. Get the hybrid delay, and I go, another delay? Nice. There must be 50 of them out there. But I put it on the channel, and I turn it, and I go, oh, I like this thing. This is great. And
it's all the subtleties. I mean, you have the delays, and then you get the little characters, and you get the little, it's the edges. It's the edge of your sound.
And so many options,
And I think one cool thing about, you hear the well, not as much anymore, but the whole debate about analog and digital and plugins. It's like, you know, in today's world, you're using a little bit of both. You're using your plugins, you're using your analog gear, and you get a nice, really good palette. And Waves is a good place to start. Well, hey, listen, we're going to wrap up the first half right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about gear. We're going to talk about power amps. The
guitar amps?
No. Regular power amps, the unsung hero of the studio. That's right. Wow. You guys are all excited, I can tell. But it's going to be good, I promise you. It's going to be exciting. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking all things Waves. And Scott was telling us a little bit about, no, not a little bit. He was telling us a lot about Waves. And really quick, how many guys you use a Waves Platinum, Waves Mercury?
Oh, yeah. Waves Mercury plus SSL plus, I think, two other Platinums.
Wow. Bobby, you have Waves?
Yes, I do. I used to beta for them, and I got their set. Got EQ and the whole package. I got the 4000 series, too.
Brandon?
Mercury.
Mercury.
Love it.
Scott?
Oh, Mercury. Yeah, I work with Waves pretty closely, but yes, Mercury is great stuff.
Bobby?
Platinum.
Platinum, see? It's just the standard, man.
And you?
I got Platinum. Right. Actually, I've got Platinum and more.
And you know what's actually one thing that wasn't said, which I think is pretty amazing, is you can now rent online Waves plugins.
Yeah.
Really?
And that's great because if you need something and you just need it for the one gig, like I know a lot of times we may need phase in or EQ, 360, whatever, you need to do a quick mix, you need to do something, and you've got another machine because you rented it. Oh, we did the World's Fair in China, and we needed to get a rig. But we don't necessarily want to buy a full package,
right?
Because so we could rent it for a month, go out, do the mixes on site, come back, and it's done.
That's cool.
And that's, I mean, used to be you can rent outboard gear, and you can never rent plugins. I think it's great.
That's pretty brilliant.
I had another comment. You were just mentioning analog versus digital, and because of the position I'm in, I've thought about that quite a bit. And one of the things that occurs to me about it is that analog, I remember selling analog products and working with analog products, and the truth is we forget that there are a lot of problems with analog. But the art of being an engineer is working around it, finding where it sounds good, you know, doing the art of developing the products and the engineers and the feedback, the back and forth between users. And so over a long time, analog got really excellent.
Right.
It got to where there was a way to make really beautiful sounds with it. And in my mind, digital is the same thing. When it first appeared, it had a lot of difficulties. It could be harsh. It could be cold. And over time, it keeps developing in the same way. What it comes down to now is that we just have a larger palette to choose from.
Right.
That we can just mix and match, and you use some things for purposes and others for not.
Yeah. But you know what? Something that I think is pretty amazing is happening now. Is over the past 5 years, wherein the modeling technology has really taken off. It's not like I'm going to try to figure it out. They model something. But then I've been heavily in the guitar side, and they're starting to do some very extensive modeling in guitar amps. But then what was interesting was they took a vintage amp and said, there's no presence knob, but I can put one in. So now what they're doing is instead of just modeling it exactly the way something is,
right,
they can model it and then modify it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's all being done with that signature sound, but making it a little bit better.
I'm sorry. Well, one of the things that you were talking about before I think is important in modeling, and that's adding the defects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keeping the defects, I should say.
It's the character, really.
The character more than the defect.
It's the character. It's a defect of the analog signal.
It's
for instance,
the same thing.
With guitar amps, for instance, I have somewhat of a relationship with Line 6. And I know somewhere along the line, they figured, when they were modeling, especially a Marshall, a Plexi, they determined that what they were missing was the 60 cycle hum that was happening, and it's a funk that happens when you first hit the you know, the chord, and there's a 60 cycle hum that comes through, and it's from bad filter caps. Well, of course, the first thing an engineer would want to do is get rid of that.
Right.
But then when a player listens to it, they go, well, it's not quite real. And that's why, because, right. You know, you don't have...
Yeah. There's so much of that in the GTR products. I'm a guitar player, and I play electric, mainly classical and flamenco, but I play electric guitar as well, and I played as a music, you know, professional for a long time. I had already used a lot of the other models out there, and there was always, it was okay, but you really couldn't use it on a record. You know, you could use it in certain ways, but, they, again, that business of really, really going over and over and being fanatical about it produced a product that at the trade shows, people would sit down and they'd start playing. And what I would do is I'd let them get going a little bit, and then I'd just change to another setting, a very different, like from surf sound to hard rock to jazz, and just dialing up things. And the real test is, if a good player is put into that circumstance, what they do is they forget that they're listening to stereo speakers. They forget that they're not plugged into an amp, and they just start playing music. And if it isn't right, you don't go there. It doesn't draw you in that way. And in my own experience, I'd go, wow, you just forget that it's coming through, you know, a crossover and, you know, a tweeter. I mean, you just never do that with a guitar. But
it's a feel thing, too. Yeah. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it has to dynamically, you know, break up more when you hit it harder and so forth. And it's quite an art, really, all this modeling. And they've really mastered it, actually. So it's an interesting thing.
Well, Rob, were you gonna- I was just going to say the other cool thing about Waves with modeling, too, is they don't just rely on modeling existing pieces of hardware. They'll model something that exists, and they'll model it really closely and do it really well. But then they'll also just build their own processors that I'm sure are using some of the modeled technology, but they're not based on any specific piece of gear. And they've been doing that more and more with the Artist Series lately.
Yes,
and,
sure. Yes, yeah. With Jack Puig's stuff in particular, I think it may be true elsewhere as well, because I know that the Chris Lord Alge LA-2A and those do things exactly like an LA-2A, but then they go beyond that. You can do things you could not do. But Jack actually, they ask everybody to reveal what their chain is, and Jack can't really do that, because what he did is he said, well, give me a little of this magic dust out of this processor and combine it with a little bit of the boom out of that one and a little bit of the squash of this one, and it isn't any one thing.
Right.
It's just elements that he wants that are in there. It's like 25 plugins under that interface, you know. And they're not whole plugins. They're just the magic part of it, you know. It's very interesting how they can now extrapolate all the elements and decide which ones they want to mix together to get that particular sound.
Well, it just goes to show you that, you know, sound is complex. It's not just the perfect replication of sound. It's sometimes, like you were saying, you need a little bit of those imperfections. And
well, we're used to them. That's the problem.
Exactly.
That's the thing about
character. You know, they add a little bit of character. Those are the edges. Those are the things on the edges. And speaking of sound with character, I want
nice segue.
I
want to talk about Waves.
Yeah, we've done that.
I want to talk about power amps.
Does Waves make a power?
Do they exist?
Yes, they do exist. You'd be surprised how many people still have a power amp. And the only reason why
they usually sit in the back of the speakers now.
Well, that's one thing. But the only reason why I wanted to tell you this too is because I got a call from a friend of mine, and he wanted me to help him set up his little home studio. And so I went over there, and he had a pair of Tannoy speakers, older set of Tannoy speakers, and they were passive. And so we started, you know, putting them together, and he plugged in the amp that he had it hooked up to, and it didn't sound really good at all. They sounded really, really strained, I guess would be a good term. Weren't fast. You couldn't hear the transients. It's not anything obvious. You just know it just doesn't sound good. Anyhow, he inherited an amp from a friend of his, and it was a Hafler, I believe. It was a Hafler amp. And he plugged in the Hafler amp, and we just said, hey, why don't we try this amp? And he plugged it in, and those speakers just sang. I mean, they just, it was
fast. Do you know what Hafler was?
I have no idea.
500, 300, 400.
Yeah, it was...
I know, 2,400.
No, that was, yeah, well, except if you had an old one.
But the speakers just, I mean, it just popped. I mean, it really was noticeable. I mean, you heard every, you heard the attacks, you heard, I mean, it was just, it was more so than just volume, although we had way more volume too. It was, yeah, it was really a noticeable difference. And I just wanted to bring that up on the podcast because you see a ton of cheap amps out there that people, you know, will have in their system and they'll try to get all these new speakers and try to, you know, boost this or do that. And sometimes it can be something as simple as the amp. And Bobby, I was hoping you'd be here because you being the gear guru, why don't you talk a little bit about the
full disclosure, I have a half the 500 of my NS10s still from many years ago. But power amps are basically loading is a big factor with power amps because they plug into speakers. The speakers generally were 4 to 8 ohms generally, and that's the resistance to AC. So basically, what speakers you're driving is really a big important thing of how the amplifier sounds as well. Some amplifiers are not meant to drive certain loads, so that can be a big difference. And slew rate is a big thing with amplifiers.
And what is that exactly?
Okay, so slew rate is a technical nerdy term which really means to say how fast the amplifier responds to transients. And slew rate is they measure it in microvolts or microseconds, basically. So how fast an amplifier will reproduce a voltage climb in microseconds count. So 55 volts per microsecond is an average of a good fast amplifier. So if for example somebody plays a hi-hat which has a lot of high frequency content and transients, if that goes through, say, you know, microphone into mic pre and then into power amplifier, if that power amp can't produce the high transients, then it will start to roll off the nice spikes that hi-hat is producing and start to roll them off, so to speak, and change the waveform, and that starts to make it sound either less dull or more compressed or whatever. Which is also desirable. The DC 300 series, the crowns, were very famous for that. I still have a couple of pairs of crowns, which I use for some things too, which are really, really good, and they have their own sound as well. But it's just different kinds of slew rates, and there's different kinds of power driving the speakers. There's A, B, different kinds of push-pull.
So are you saying sometimes you'll want a slower slew rate?
Sometimes you do. You know, one of my favorite amplifiers is called a Macintosh, not a computer.
No, I know.
But...
It has a K in it.
It's got a Macintosh.
It's got a K in it.
And it's a fantastic sounding amp. And it's tube and it's horrible, really. If you put it on a scope, it's not really very good, but it sounds fantastic. And lots of times...
it's very warm.
Very, very warm and furry and actually distorts a little bit, but very nice. So it's a character thing. If you like, it's what you want to hear. I think people's biggest mistakes are with speakers is that they look at the small pair of speakers like NS10s, the old days, passive speakers or Tannoy 6.5s or some of the smaller ones,
right?
And they would put like a little 100-watt amplifier,
yeah,
on, or
exactly,
amplifier.
Exactly.
And that thing will peak, you know, it will fart out. It won't be able to deliver high quality. What you really want to do is overpower your amplifier, your speaker. Sorry. So if you have a 150-watt RMS, that's root mean square averaging speaker, expect to see that sort of power coming to it. Put 1,000 watts on it. I know it sounds dangerous and silly. It certainly is. If you patch something in wrong, you'll take your speakers right out, but it will sound fantastic until you don't. So I suggest that. And also for headphone amps, a lot of people put headphone amps, they're like, I have a 5-watt headphone amplifier, and you can't get a kick drum to kick your ass through something like that.
You need
500 watts distributed with a loading system for headphones. That's what makes things sound really good.
Well,
so power to impedance loading.
Because you don't want to hit that distortion level. You just want to, you know.
You just want that to be able to deliver. You know, basically what a power amp does is convert a little bit of voltage equally to a very large voltage. That's really all it does, and hopefully it does it with the least amount of artifacts and additive noise and stuff like that. So high slew rate and a high power rating, you know, power output into a decent range of impedance is what you want. So Hafflers make good ones. There's lots of better ones, but Hafflers makes a decent one.
You know, it's amazing how much character these speakers had, though, and how you could hear everything. I mean, you could the little attack on the hi-hat, and it just opened the mix up, and it was pretty astonishing.
For which speakers?
For the Tenoys. I think they were the 6.5s.
The 6.5s. Yeah. I have a pair of those too. I forgot.
Yeah, I'm in my closet.
But they sounded great. They were great sounding, and you're right, because it was plenty of power. I mean, you just knew if you crank that thing up, you damage those speakers.
I like doing reamping lots of times where I have whatever in the studio. Like, for example, I like setting up a drum kit with toms on it and then setting a recording of a drum box through it and mic the drum kit up, because it's kind of nice for silly stuff. But I recently went to Guitar Center. They had a special on old crap that they were selling. And I found it was a pair of 218s in a folded horn system, and basically a three-way power system for a DJ. It was 2,000 watts. It was called the B3, I think it was.
Right.
And it wasn't working and whatever. And I said, oh, I'll take it from you, $400. And I took it back home, fixed it. It was a crossover blown, and, you know, obviously. But I fixed it up and got it. And the thing just cranks. It really is so loud. So now what I do is I bring it into my live room, and I set up my drum kit, and I put, like, sound through it, like, and mic them up. And this, you know, because it's so loud, it just saturates the room. And the toms sound really good. I mean, you really get a great sound.
Yeah,
so
cool.
There's a lot of great fun you can have with
that's cool.
Obliterating speakers. It's fantastic.
Well, you know, when I was over at Martin's studio, when we were first putting it together, and it was amazing that Martin uses Quested speakers, which Scott also reps. But we were using his Quested speakers, and we ran his Crown 150 through the Quested, and they sounded okay. We hooked them up to the Brystons, and they Bryston is an amazing amp.
Yeah.
It's a great amp. It was amazing, the difference and sound. And you know, that's something I think nowadays with all the active speakers that you get, that I think people kind of miss out is the fact that of matching a high-end Bryston against a high-end speaker, because most speakers now are powerful. But, you know, back in the day, you would have, you know, your high-end speakers, and you'd spend some time figuring out what speakers you want, and you'd spend some time figuring out what amp you wanted to go with that. And, I mean, I just remember going into, like, you know, some of the bigger studios, and they have those big, massive, you know, monitors that would be like half a wall big and matched with
Yuri
awesome.
14s,
just the wall of sound. And nowadays, you know, you don't see that.
Being able to match the amps and the speakers are massively important. I know I've
for personality, yeah.
One of my speaker systems that I use is the LSR32s, the passive system. And we found that they've got a big enough driver on them that when you put certain amps on it, it was okay. It sounded fine. And then we put a Bryston on it, and night and day. It's like we got an extra octave down on the low end.
Unbelievable.
And it just was tight.
Yeah.
And the highs were crisp. The slew rate's really nice. And it just turned the whole speaker into another system.
That's a good point with the low end. You really notice it on the low end.
Yeah, it uses the most power, yeah.
You need current.
It needs to be fast.
Exactly. It's like you can just tell it has plenty of power just to send out all that low energy out and just roll it out there. And
the way it recovers, too, because lots of times amplifiers, you know, they're connected to a speaker, especially the low-frequency speakers, like 15-inch speaker, 18-inch speaker, and there's a natural inertia with the speaker cone going out,
right,
like a boosh, and it comes back, and when it goes back, it puts voltage back into the amplifier. It's called back EMF. So some amplifiers don't behave well when that. So clever designs, people have nicely differential outputs, which makes speakers go out quickly and let them come back real quickly. So it changed, because if you go like that, it actually... and it doesn't come back as slow, you're actually changing the waveform it's supposed to be putting out. So it makes it sound floppy, as you said, or like...
Same thing with subs, too, if you want to get that...
Subs, exactly.
You want that nice whack or bass extension.
And not
you
make
need.
It stand rather than boom. Long too long, yeah.
If you want a whop or a pop.
It's a shame, because that art is dying a lot, because people do buy powered speakers. And powered speakers with active crossovers are a completely different animal to a good power amplifier going into a passive.
But you know what? But when they're matched, because I also have a pair of Dynes. I use a lot of Dyne audio speakers. And those things are matched. And I can hear things on the Dynes that I've never heard. I mean, the JBLs I like because they're very average. And when I do something on them, they translate wonderfully. But sometimes I hear hi-hat. Hi-hat's a good one. High-end frequencies. And you hear like a little distortion. It's there. You know, it's okay. It's a little, you know, and... Then all of a sudden, I put it on the dynes, and I can hear the air around it. Yeah. I hear all of the detail. It's like, it's beautiful. It's the difference between a really good standard def television and a really nice high def TV. Yeah. All of a sudden, for me, when I go to the dynes, I hear all the reverb. I hear the room. I hear the high end. I hear all the sound around, the air around the sounds, you know, which the JBL won't do.
Has anybody worked on the Allen side speakers?
I've been wondering about that. Those are pretty amazing. I've heard they're wonderful, but I haven't heard them.
Back in the days...
50,000 each?
Now he has them down at 25, I think.
We worked on his speakers at record one.
What's that?
Didn't he do the speakers at record one?
Yeah, and he also did them at A&M way back. Mm-hmm. Which is when I was first introduced to him.
Was that the same thing back then? Same thing?
Well, mostly. And the reason why I bring it up is because he relies on DC-300s and some old Yamaha power.
The black ones, yeah.
Those are good.
And searches the world for these things, because when you buy the system, it's a turnkey system. It's hit the installation, it's the speakers, and it's the amplifiers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. and they really do sound pretty fabulous. And what I especially like about them is they go loud, but they don't seem loud. They just seem big and bigger and bigger and bigger.
There's a couple of things that I've run into lately. You know, you think we've pretty much hit the limit of what you can get out of a speaker. I've started using Polonus speakers.
How are those?
They're fantastic.
I know some friends have those.
The thing is that tannoys are very. I always keep going back to coaxials. It just attracts me. Something about it tells me more of what I want to know.
Phase coherence.
Tannoys are voiced forward in the upper mid a little bit, and that doesn't. It's not what I like to hear that much. Polonus has all the quality of that coaxial. But it doesn't honk. It's just smooth all the way. It's the only monitor that really does its job that I also like to listen to. I'll just go in the studio to listen to music because they sound accurate and true and great. They're not coloring it. It's not, you know, fussing it up, but it's just smooth.
Do you like the sound of 604s?
Yeah. Yeah, but this is a whole other category. But the thing I was getting to is that...
And how much are the Polonus speakers?
What?
How much are the Polonus speakers?
Well, I have tens, which are, I think they're like 6,000 a pair. Right. But it's the amplifier, the crossover, right. It's a passive crossover. It's very well thought through. But here's the interesting thing. I had them in my studio. In my room, I have a little bit of a low-end thing that Chris Polonus came in and helped me fix. And it's stable. But the speaker sounded fine, but I kept hearing people talk about recoil and tightening up that, and one of my friends built a big brick, you know, stand and put bricks on his speakers, and he said, hey, you know what, it sounds better. He goes, it's tighter and cleaner. So I went out and got some of those, one of the better recoil ones with the heavy plate. What are those called? Does anybody know the, they make acoustic material and
Prima
stuff.
Prima.
And I, you know, we'll see what happens. And I put them on there, and I thought, oh man, this sounds a lot better. It got even smoother, it got even more stable, and it, wherever I felt there might have been a little bit of added, it just went away. It was, like, quite noticeable.
Hmm. What power amps is he using?
I don't know. I think they're, I kind of hate to say, they're not a common one. They're a little less common. They take a long time to warm up, if that's any clue you might know.
I don't know. Maybe tube.
They're not tube. It takes you want to let them warm up for about 20 minutes before you really count on them.
Sounds like my car.
But exactly. But,
Honda.
But
yeah. Honda.
The whole system works really well, and it's. I mean, I also work with Quested, and the thing about Quested is the accuracy of the sound. You know, I've had people who want, you know, there's Dynes and Adams and a few out there that are really premium speakers. And the thing I find is that all of them have a little bit of added something. They seem a little wider, they seem a little deeper, and it's very attractive and it pulls you in. But the Quested don't seem to do that. They just seem to be flat, dead honest, and it's not flattering at all. But if you understand the inverse quality of mixing, anything you add to the speaker, you take away from your mix. So that truthfulness is really important. And it's very interesting how much it'll change your mix. A lot of film composers that I've shown Questus to will suddenly go, uh-oh, I hear what the problem is here. And they find their way, like you were saying, Scott, you hear more detail. You know where the problem is. It's easier to find out. One other thing that's been interesting lately about speakers, you're talking about a system. So you say, well, good amplifier. Well, good cables, good short cables.
Right.
You know, a little bit of recoil control. It goes out into a room. You have to fix that room. It's kind of a
good placement as well. Away from
good placement. It's a scientific, you know, kind of world. But when they're right, it's such a pleasure to work. And you realize it wears you out to have them not be right.
Well, speaking of cable, what cable is everyone using on their speakers, just out of curiosity?
Well, I'm using Kimber cable, so I had them for a long time.
Oh, Mr. Fancy.
It just happens to be what I bought them a long time ago. I liked them, and I never changed. I know there are a lot of really great cables out there, but those are the ones I've been using.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm using now, but I'll tell you what I used to use, and you can laugh. I used to go to Car Guys. What was it called? Pet Boys. And you know these jumper cables?
Yeah.
They used to make these jumper cables for rated at 50 amps, but they're like that, and they were cheap. And I used to strip them off, and I used to put BNCs on them. I used to run my NS10s on them. I was smoking. Wow. And I could have sworn I heard a difference.
I got a quick story about
and I could start my car.
Hey, and it was a lot cheaper. Yeah. But now I use Monster, but it was a lot cheaper than Monster. I was like, hey. $20, done.
I had one. I went to, I was over at Westlake, the speaker company, and the owner was there, and he said, you want to do something? I said, what? And he said, let me do a demo for you. So I thought, fine, you know, this will be great. I'll go listen to some Westlakes. He had a couple of really nice near fields sitting in this anaconic chamber, and I go in, and he plays this track, and it sounded really beautiful. It was a jazz track, female vocal, very vivid, really nice. And he goes, now, just wait a minute. The speaker has two terminals coming in and two coming out, and he only had two of them. He only had one per cable, per speaker hooked up. So he unplugs them, he takes some crinoline, and he cleans the connections inside and out, plugs them back in, takes another set, and plugs them into the other terminals, cleans them all. And I'm thinking, well, you know, how much difference is it going to make? You know, you just don't think it's going to matter that much. And I'm telling you, it was stunning. It's like it got 50 feet deeper, way wider. The person in the middle, you realize now, was out of focus. It was fuzzy. And now your brain thinks, I can touch that. It's right in front of me. It was an amazing demonstration. And that's what started to sell me on every little bit of that chain actually really matters. And it makes it better. The question I have, though, is if you're in that kind of luxury when you're mixing and it's going to go out into the real world, no one's ever going to know what you heard.
Well, you've got to play it on an iPod.
It's going to be an MP3. Wow.
It's strange you say that, though, because I use Stabilant 22, it's called. It's made for spaceships, I think. But anyway, it's essentially quite $100 for a little tiny bottle. You mix it.
Of course it is.
You dilute it with alcohol, and you get a syringe, and you pop it in your critical connector buttons, and passing audio. It really makes a difference. Also, TT cables and your patch bay.
That stuff.
That's a great answer to the question of if you had $100 to spend in your studio, what would you get?
Stabilant 22.
There you go. That kind of handles it all.
Yeah.
Well, it's a shame, though, that the whole power amp, because I don't think we're going to see power amps come back. I mean, it's you're going to see active speakers are only going to get more and more complex, and they're actually going to get more and more digital.
But these are balanced. I mean, a good speaker, it's their recommendation, their ears of being able to say,
sometimes
these drivers with these amps.
But some of the cheaper ones, though, you hear the cheaper ones, the big manufacturers that are making cheap speakers, you just can tell that their speakers are underpowered because they're going for the cheapest, littlest power.
Maya Sound, I used to do live sound for many years, and they came out with, as you maybe know or not, but they came out with a very clever crossover system which delivered power to actively shift the frequency of the crossover depending on how much power was going to it. So there's lots of clever ways of getting small power amps to actually sound pretty good still, and not still. I mean, they kind of perfected that about 20 years ago.
Well, it's basically Class D power amp. They're using it for a crossover.
Exactly, right. And they're great until they blow up, because they're obviously a little finicky, but they're really, really very efficient for their size. I mean,
well,
that's why rock and roll sounds so good.
But you know, I'll just make a little curve because I've been really into this, and then I'll get out of it.
Here we go.
Wait, just because one thing
I've way to heaven. Here we go.
No. With guitar amps, I was going to say one thing that I've noticed. That they've it's a slightly different trend. They used to be like 100 watt, 200 watt. Now they're 15 watt. 15 watt class A. Yeah. 20 watt, really low. So what they're doing is they're grabbing the highest components you can buy and they're distorting them with tubes. So what happens is all of a sudden you get these amazing upper harmonics and sounds and articulation in guitars that you're not used to hearing. And it's really the same concept. Is they're using a super, super duper. Super, God, where'd that come from? Super high-end components and amps and the way point-to-point wiring. And then they're just saying, now what is it we distort that? And all of a sudden it's a very pleasant sound.
Yeah, and that's how you're getting some of those really cool small little dino lunchbox size little amps and heads that are coming out now.
Yeah.
With
Marshall 50 into a 4. Well, still doesn't fit. Well, I mean, I got to say, all this technology is like, dude, tune it up.
Actually, the thing is, the amp technology, it's actually very old.
I know.
They just do it higher quality, you know.
The lure of electricity.
And they're
kind of
going,
changed.
You don't need, you know. Over 100 watts is huge.
Yeah, it's too much.
I mean, now it's 17, 20.
But 50 is a nice size. 50 was a lovely size. It was like nicely move your trousers size. Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing, too, though, is a lot of people, there's not those big rooms to play the big Marshall stack in anymore. You know, they're looking for something tiny so that they can stick it in there.
You can't mix a band in most rooms with the way they play. I know a group that I went to come see us play. And I went and I just thought, I can't hear the vocals at all. I can't hear. And I just told them, I said, guys, you know, this is not happening. You can't do this. It's not working. And they actually went away and bought new amps and toned everything way down. I saw them again. They sounded great. You could hear the singing. You could hear the playing. There was dynamics. You could get a feel for what the song was, you know.
But even medium-sized venues start using Marshalls, and then you have to start doing the strange mixing of competing against the actual on-stage amp.
Right.
So the amp's on the right side, you know, or stage left, I guess it would be. And all of a sudden you're sitting there competing against, okay, well, he's got it this volume, so I need to embellish it, but on that speaker, you know, it's...
Well, the guitar amp's always, sense. Like, head height, too.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's very... very beamed.
Were you on the Stevie tour in Australia?
Yes, where we played the Crown Casino.
I'm thinking of the show where it was an outdoor venue, but it was in a neighborhood, and Nate Watts, Stevie's bass player, his onstage volume was louder than the city ordinance for sound, like for the whole show. Like they were measuring just his bass cabinet, you know, ringing through during sound check. I mean, we always knew he had it loud, but I just thought that was hilarious. His one instrument is louder than the city allows for the whole stadium.
Well, he liked it to boom up there.
But the thing is, that makes it really tricky for a mixer because, like, in the house, they couldn't even put his bass in the PA because the stage level was loud enough.
It'll cancel the mains.
Yeah. Right, so you're fighting with that onstage level. It's actually, you know, really, really hard.
I used to work with... Steve Miller, and he actually was smart because he got fed up with getting deaf because he started getting old and getting deaf. And he had all these flight cases with all these amps off stage with mics. We had two mic XLRs coming out of the cabs.
Yeah.
And they sounded great because they were used to wear earwigs, the little in-ear monitors. Yeah. It was silent, and they used to sing really well. They used to play much better when they turned down.
Similar thing when I was younger, I did some work with Frank Zappa. And one thing I liked about all their amps were all in the side stage, facing in, so the audience never got any of it. Hmm. So all their amps were just, you know, on the side of the stage, and I thought it was just kind of brilliant. Then you still walk around just listening to the mix.
I will add, I did see AC/DC once in Chicago, and they had like a wall of Marshall on one side,
and they're all
a wall of bass, and it's just loud. I was like,
sometimes you just got to feel it.
You can hear the guy screaming over the top, and that was it.
Hey, listen, we gotta wrap it up, and wow, thank you so much for joining us, Scott, and
it's a real pleasure.
And talking to us and all things. And I will recommend, boy, there is nothing better sounding than the Quested H108s with a Bryston amplifier. That is an awesome pair.
Bryston is, I think, the only manufacturer, at least the only one I know of, that it has a warranty that is transferable and is life is there is no limit. It's always under warranty no matter what, how you got it or when you got it or when they made it. If it fails, you send it back so they fix it for free. Who else does that?
Nobody. So if you're looking for something different and you want to get a different speaker setup, you know, go a little old school. Go for a amplifier and a passive system, and you might just find them to be your next best speaker.
Class A MOSFETs.
What do you use, Bobby? Yeah,
I've got Hafflers and Crowns, and I've got a H&H. And Genelecs, of course, have got their own junk in them, which are junk.
Do you know what was a good, before I end, the Meyer HD1s?
Yeah.
That was the green one, right? The green.
Did little LED in the front?
Yeah.
Yellow.
It kind of started the whole, you know, powered active speakers. Yeah. And they weren't cheap. They're like $5,000 for a pair when they came out. But boy, they sounded fantastic.
You know what, though?
Furry bottom end, right?
We used to blow those things out like there was a prize for it.
I mean, well, you couldn't get much volume out of there.
I used to
blow them out pretty easy.
Sorry, the EV ones. Remember the EVs?
Yeah.
Those things were smoking. You put like a 1,000-watt amp on those things, and they're just like. Horrible. Lovely.
All right. Well, once again, thank you, Scott. So before we go, Rob, you working on anything fun and exciting?
What am I working on? Well, one big milestone. Actually, there have been a few big milestones. A couple days ago or a few days ago, the City Love contest, City Love Music contest came to an end.
Really?
The winners were announced and... I assume the prizes have been paid, but got over 250 entries, songs and videos, and so thank you everybody for who wrote and voted and everything. So that was a huge project for me. I mean, we talked about it a long time ago, but it was the first big web infrastructure I ever built, music-related, that allowed uploads and everything. So it survived, made it through to the end, so I'm very happy about that. And Bobby's songs were still... He had four songs in there. Still four of the strongest on there.
There you go. There's only four on there. That's why.
You can go to citylovemusic.com and check them out.
Yes, but you got to check out the Sydney song because that's brilliant. I like
you
the
like that one?
Which one?
I like
Sydney.
All four of them.
Oh, it's really they're all four Sydney. They're all cool.
Well, they're all about Sydney, all but about one of them Sydney. Is actually called Sydney.
Yeah.
Oh, the one that has the one. And Forest Play.
That's right. The four collaboration songs are about
DC 300.
So I'm glad that is... over successfully. The Tasha Taylor album is going to be coming out in about 2 weeks from now, which I have no idea how long that'll be from whenever this posts. The other thing that's a big milestone for me that won't be by the time this posts, but today happens to be the 25th anniversary of the day I moved to California to work with Steve.
Yay!
At this exact time, 25 years ago, I was scared out of my mind and away from home for the first time and freaking out.
And you were thinking,
"Happy birthday to
you." It was pretty scary.
And you were thinking, in 25 years, I'm going to be on a podcast somewhere.
That's exactly what I was thinking. No, I don't think I was quite thinking that, but a huge milestone for me. And then we're just working on some commercials at the moment, doing music for some commercials, and the usual stuff.
Great. Great. And Scott, do you want to push anything? I mean, I know Waves is having a big 40% off all your bundles.
Yeah, the Neris special is back on, so you can get 50% off if you remember. Too many things to list, so go to the website and look around.
Great. Brandon.
Hey.
How's it going, man?
It's going good. About the same things going on in Trailer Park, but one sort of milestone. Got a song of mine licensed in the new Coen trailer for the new Coen Brothers movie, True Grit.
Really?
The old
nice
old movie. Really cool. So it's That's really great. Exciting to have it in there right next to a Johnny Cash song, which is great.
Fantastic. Really? And when's that going to be out in the theaters?
I don't know when it comes to the theaters. The trailer's online right now, and I think it's playing in front of the Social Network.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm talking about the trailer. I don't care about
the trailer. You can find it on Yahoo and wherever else.
That's cool. That's great. That's good. One. Bobby, how about you?
Yeah,
brother, it's good to have you back.
It's nice to be back, mate. Sorry, I've been away. I've been around. I bet you went off to the World Cup to see the soccer. I went to Switzerland to play soccer, and now I'm back. But I'm actually got a little thing to tell you. What am I doing? I'm doing, you know, Audio Bro, the string library, LA Scoring Strings. I've partnered with Andrew, and we're doing a new library together. It's coming out pretty soon, and it's going to be on for Native Instruments Contact. It's going to be an orchestral kind of library for composers, which is kind of cool. And important information for you, because you all know Martin Page very well. He and I have got a record coming out in 7 days' time on Robbie Williams' new album.
That's right.
And must let you know, because Robbie's obviously letting out the bag now. So it's 7 days' time it gets released, and Martin wrote it, and he and I produced it and recorded it at my place, and it's good for him, so it's really great. So
yeah, that's the track, The Long Walk Home, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly right.
That's
exactly right.
It's a great song.
It's a great song, a good song.
Robbie does a good job with it.
He does, too.
He does. It's really good. You guys did a good job.
Thank you.
Scott, how about you?
Still playing with witches and monks. Zombie monks, to be specific. Other than that, you know, it's nothing new as much as what I've been mostly working on. But I've kind of got a resurgence on my guitar side, so I've been pretty much boring all my friends at this point. So I've been taking a journey in the land of guitar and all the details of different kinds of speakers, different kinds of tubes, what's the amp sound like, and the world of vintage amps. And I'm a kid, literally a kid in the candy store. I went to the amp show this weekend.
Wow.
And
The amp show,
yeah.
That's
like,
cool.
There's got to be about 30 different amp manufacturers.
Wow.
You go room to room, and you just either grab your guitar or grab their guitar and just check it all out. And what I like, just as a sound person, is it's one of those places that you can actually compare. You can actually say, hey, I've heard the difference between a Fender and a Vox. Not only that, but the new Vox, because the white, plexi style of Vox that they've got. And then this couple amps I've never even heard of that don't even sell in stores. They sell them direct.
Wow.
And hearing these amazing technologies, or lack of them, that just have these amazing sounds. And for me, it's just a wonderful, fun experience.
Give me a brand that's insanely expensive.
Oh,
guitar amp.
Dumble.
Really?
The Dumble amp.
Dumbles.
The Dumble. I love the Dumble. It's Larry Carlton, Robin Ford, John Mayer.
And how much are they? I'm just curious.
About 30 grand?
40 grand.
40 grand now, yeah.
Is that the amp?
They only made 300 of them.
So how do you spell it? That's not D-U-M-B.
D-U-M-B-L-E.
B-A-B-U-L-L, no.
Is it Dumble?
Oh,
Dumble, yeah. No, it's something. They only made 300 of them if you want them. There's a lot of knockoffs of companies that have been inspired by that sound and have created a much inexpensive versions. But again, it's just a wonderful sound, and listening to the technology and what goes into it.
Wow.
Because a lot of times what happens, if you're not in a live performance, you lose a lot of the nuances.
Right.
And just hearing the stuff, it was quite.
See, again, now I got to hear
quite
it.
An education.
Yeah, I want to hear what a $40,000.
You know what? There's one guy out of Florida, which I can't even pronounce his name, but Schweck.
No,
Thomas Zweck. Zweck. But it's JL Sound, I think, .com. He only sells out of Florida, but he's made these amazing sounding amps that, as you play the guitar, if you play it soft, it goes clean. If you play it hard, without the volume knob, it gets really crunchy. So you get these amazing articulations that when you start playing, everyone's like, wow, listen to this. And if you look at online at the amp show, they've been winning. This one guy has been winning awards as like one of the best sounding amps.
Wow.
At the amp show because of it. And he's just a guy who's just in a town trying to make, trying to get known. And
how much are those?
Yeah, what are those?
You know what? Those, it was actually inexpensive. The head is only $800.
Oh, that's not
bad.
And
the speakers are
$400. Wow.
So he's using Celestion Heritage speakers compared to a lot of the boutiques, $65 and all that, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 easy.
Wow.
Whether you use T-Rock or Fuchs or any of those, you can start getting into some very expensive amps. And these are the small ones. The one I was looking at is a 17 Water with a 112-inch Celestion Heritage. And it just had this amazing sound to it that when you played, for better or for worse, You hear everything the way you play, and
is that good?
You know what? I love the idea that you have expression. You know how you bite and how you pick and all this stuff.
Right.
So yeah.
That's brilliant.
You know, the cool thing about guitar amps, I must say, I know practically nothing about guitar amps other than like the, you know, the Vox and the match frames and the Fenders. Mm-hmm. But they just look so cool. I mean,
they
you know,
do,
when
yeah.
you see
they're
somebody
like
who has,
Davidson's.
Yeah, you see somebody who has a lot of different, you know, guitar amps or collects them, and especially if they're lined up really nice and maybe the guitar's on top, they just look cool. There's a certain coolness about a good amp.
Let me do, because I did like this amp. It's Thomas, TOMASZEWICZ. And it's JL, Zewicz?
Zewicz.
Sandwich.
Yeah, I know. But it's jlsound.com. And I just, you know, I just put out something out for that because everybody was like, wow, listen to this app.
That's cool.
So it did definitely get noticed at the show.
Well, thank you for that rundown on guitar amps.
I have a quick Dumble story. It's really quick, but we used Dumbles on Stevie Ray Vaughan's Live Alive album. He relayed a bunch of guitars, and I think, if I remember right, Dumble himself brought the amps to the studio, and he was kind of an eccentric guy, but everybody was just completely blown away by the sound. And we had stacks and stacks of amplifiers. It was definitely the loudest sessions I've ever been part of.
Wow.
But there was something about the Dumble, and Stevie Ray just loved them.
Hmm.
And so a lot of the tracks ended up just being the Dumble.
Well, now I know where I can hear a Dumble.
Yeah.
You
can hear them on John Mayer records. You can hear them on
David Lindley used them quite a bit.
Yeah.
I have, a Dumble story as well. Alexander Dumble is very eccentric, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems is that people would give him deposits of $3,000, $5,000 and come back 3 years later and he'd forget.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of mine decided that he'd go in business with them and said, okay, I will buy the parts, and all I need you to do is build the things, and I'll sell them. And he thought, this is absolutely foolproof. Well, it turned out it was less than foolproof, where the same thing happened. There's all these parts around, and Dumble just kind of decided that he'd build these and then decided he was going to build something else. And then he decided he wasn't going to build anything at all and just drug it out forever and ever and ever. So my friend finally got his money back because it didn't take long, obviously, you know, with $30,000. I think he was selling for $15,000, so it was a quick turn.
Yeah, the price went up. Yeah. I mean, I remember because back in the early 90s, they were $2,000 or $3,000. I mean, it really went crazy over time.
Yeah.
But he did get his money back?
He got his money back, yeah, but it took a long time.
Sheesh.
Wow. Yeah. Bobby, are you working on anything, writing any more books? You got anything coming out? Anything you want to plug?
I'm actually just about to jump into television world again. I'm producing a pilot that's going to start next week. And then it looks like in November we'll go back and do a few more Guitar Universe shows. So I put my producer's cap on.
What's a Guitar Universe show?
Guitar Universe is a show that we did about, I don't know, 18 episodes, 19 episodes of it. And it's everything about the guitar and the people that play it. And it's basically a segment with some celebrities, just, you know, Joe Walsh or Billy Gibbons or somebody like that, just talking about their guitars and their collections and whatever. And then we'll do factory tours and we'll do some workshops and things like that. It's all about the guitar. And
is it all about electric guitar or other
kinds of guitar? No, it doesn't matter. It's the guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a fun show. It's really good.
And where does that air? Where can you see that?
Well, I'm not sure where these are going to air. But when we first did it was actually for Discovery.
Oh, okay.
Although it never made Discovery because we had an interesting kind of fallout. best left for another
yes. cool. Well, that sounds interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing some more about that.
Yeah, you can see some bits and pieces of it on YouTube.
That's cool.
And Mike, what are you doing?
Not mixing a 15-second commercial. That's done. just working, and we are. I will let the cat out of the bag that we are in pre-production right now to do finally do our video stuff, Spaces. And we've made some travel plans and going to be heading out doing some shooting. And it's been working on that, so that'll be kind of fun. One thing I do want to say is I just want to thank everybody out there. We are, you know, our downloads, our RSS feed is getting picked up. And last week we had our best week ever on downloads. And it was pretty amazing. We were averaging well over 300 shows a day, which was, I don't know where that came from. You know, it was amazing. So, we get little spurts. I can track them down to like if somebody posts or does a repost on their site and another repost on their site, and it kind of builds.
Viral,
exactly. It kind of goes viral. So we're getting some really good numbers, and we just passed, over a terabyte of downloads this year, which is more than 28,000 shows. So I just want to thank all the listeners out there and for at least hanging on.
Spreading the word.
Yep. I think we got more than 7. I think we're probably up to 9 listeners.
Jeez. That just so our moms can stop listening.
But it's really great. And it's, I've recently got into all the Google Analytics, and then there's another one, StatCounter, that actually Bobby turned me on to. And it's pretty cool. You get to see where people are visiting your webpage from and things like that. And
so where are we being visited from?
Well, here's the thing with our podcast. If you look at our webpage, there's not much there, you know? So we get most of the stuff through – a lot of our stuff goes out through the RSS feeds and through iTunes. Right. So we don't get a lot of people coming to the website per se to enjoy the website, which I don't blame them. It's there basically if they need to download or if they want to get some more information. So we track maybe about, I don't know, maybe about a quarter of our actual traffic on it. So, for instance, according to
Antarctica,
Well, yeah, I mean, we're all, it's, all over the
big in Fiji right now.
Yeah. Well, for instance, we don't have anybody from Nevada that's been to our website yet.
And I don't blame them, really. If I lived in Nevada, I wouldn't go to the website.
But do you think with Nevada, with, the schools out there, I'm sure one of our RSS feeds is probably going to somebody in Nevada who's listening to, to the podcast. But, I'm learning a lot how to track all this. But I do know, I see how much bandwidth we're pushing out. I see how much data we're getting charged for. but I just wanted, I just wanted to thank everybody for listening, and we're trying to do some new things, and we're just going to keep moving forward, and we're getting a lot of good response on our Facebook and our webpage. And if you're out there and you listen to us in Nevada, just visit our website once.
Or send an email.
Why don't we start up porn audio or something like that? We get a lot of that. Nevada, everyone would download it.
Mustang audio.
There's a reason why there's no video. All right. Well, hey, if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Hey, I also want to thank Jeremy Davis. He's our new producer. And Jeremy is doing an awesome job. He is helping to update the websites. He's going to be writing a lot of the blurbs now, and he's taking care of – basically, He's doing a lot of the heavy lifting so that we can continue having a podcast on a biweekly basis as opposed to, sorry, guys, we have to push this week. because we have to hit every other week until January, because that's when our 100th podcast is going to happen.
Oh, that's it. Then we can retire.
This one's 93.
Where are we going to have the 100th show? We're doing something amazing.
Vegas.
No, we're working on something. It's around Nama. We're working on something right now.
Rio.
It's going to be fun.
Room at the Super 8 near Nam.
The Super 8.
We're under the stage of guitar night.
I think everybody's going to be there. So we'll do something that Thursday night. I'm working on it right now. So
excellent.
It'll be fun. We can't do it Friday because everybody's going to do it on Friday. We can't do it Saturday because that's,
we can't do it whenever the Waves dinner is.
Yes.
Yeah. Careful about that. Yes. There are certain things you can't miss.
Is that Thursday?
I don't know.
It's usually Saturday.
What the deal is. I don't know if they're showing it at ES or not. So we'll have to see what...
No,
what
we're talking NAMM.
We're talking NAMM.
Oh, NAMM? Oh, yeah.
And they'll be here.
So we can't do Friday night.
Can we worry about it in a few months, guys?
All right, well, hey, listen. That's okay.
It's all about the food.
I can make a giant edit right here anyhow. Okay. I mean, we could pretty much say anything. You know, talk about elephants having sex. I could edit it out.
I said you're a sick, sick man, Mike.
Okay, well, anyhow, like I said, if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also get to us. You can also reach us
for the theme music.
You can also reach us on our Facebook site, and if you have any suggestions for a discussion or for a topic, you can post it there. So for myself and all the guys, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
To the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Apex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.